Dave and Darren in the morning. It's something that we do weekdays, 5:30 to 10 on Planet 93.9.
That checks out.
Real alternative radio, and what you're about to hear are some of the best things that happened on the show. It's our Top 5 Things podcast.
I think we should start at the beginning.
Well, that's a beautiful place to start, yes. We'll begin the Top 5 Things podcast.
Numerically.
With, yes, no, I like what you're doing there. Let's start with...
Number one.
Number one. And this should be obvious.
Okay,
Number one.
There's a movie opening up tomorrow in theaters. Looks like it'll be both at Cinemark Davenport and Regal Moline, starting as early as tomorrow morning. And the thing is, no matter how many times I see commercials for this movie, or trailers even, I'm not convinced it's a real movie. It seems like a very elaborate practical joke to me.
Are you talking about the Michael Jordan movie?
Indeed I am.
It does kind of look like it's a joke.
Is it? What is it? Is this real?
Yes.
I feel like this is a long...
little joke?
Prank?
Yeah.
Or is it a commercial for shoes? Like, who wanted to see the movie of how the contract to make Michael Jordan Air Jordans happen? Who wanted to see that?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just basically they're taking a page from like ESPN's 30 for 30 or something.
Okay, but I think it would be more interesting as a documentary than to have Matt Damon go, I've got an idea. Michael Jordan, he's going to be the greatest basketball player ever, but nobody will listen to me when I say it. It's Matt Damon walking into a room going, I know how to put Nike on the map. We're going to sign Michael Jordan. And everyone in the room goes, Michael Jordan? We don't know who that is. That's a movie for 2 hours? A real movie?
Now, I know that Viola Davis plays Michael Jordan's mom.
She does. She plays the role of Dolores Jordan.
Who plays Michael Jordan?
I don't know that he has a role in this.
I was going to say, is there a Michael Jordan character in the movie?
No.
Which I don't get.
No, Dolores Jordan played by Viola Davis. Julius Tennant plays James Jordan Sr. I don't see anyone here on the list of credits playing the role of Michael Jordan. So he just had his mom sign all his contracts for him?
They couldn't get Michael B. Jordan to play Michael Jordan?
None of this.
Was he too busy making Creed 5?
None of this makes any sense. It's a biographical sports drama. Directed by Ben Affleck. Oh, come on. This is a real thing. I don't know, man. I don't see it. Nobody knows who what our shoes are. And nobody knows who this guy is. This is a dumb move. No, it's not. I'll show you. I think Michael Jordan's going to be great.
Yeah, that's... And you say it starts tomorrow?
It'll be in theaters tomorrow. It's from Amazon Studios. This is the first film Amazon has ever released in theaters without simultaneously premiering it on their Prime Video service since Late Night in 2019. Is it getting good reviews?
That I don't know.
Rotten Tomatoes, 99% of 70s critics' reviews are positive.
Well, that's pretty good.
Average rating of 8.10 out of 10. The website's consensus reads that Air is a fact-based drama that no one will dunk on. Air aims to dramatize events that change the sports world forever and hits almost nothing but net. Really? Because when I see the commercials and when I watch the trailer, I'm not convinced. I feel like if I go to the theater and I buy a ticket, I'm going to walk into the theater and there's going to be bullies there waiting to beat me up. For being so stupid.
Did you know that Owen Wilson is playing, what's the guy's name?
Okay, now that's not, is that, I know what you're thinking.
Is that real?
That's another movie where I think, what is this?
It's called Paint.
But he's Bob Ross, but he's
Bob Ross.
But he's not Bob Ross.
Oh, but he's not Bob Ross.
No, and that movie seems fascinating to me.
My God.
Because.
What a time to be alive.
Because all he does is paint the same mountain over and over again. And they keep telling him, like, you got to start painting other stuff.
No, I don't.
And he finds ways to sneak the mountain into every painting. When I saw that over the weekend, I thought, I would see that. But I'm not quite sure if that's
Is it from the same people that made the Weird Al movie?
Right? It seems like these are all...
God.
Yeah, he's playing the role of a painter named Carl Nargle.
Yeah, but he's...
Carl Nargle has hosted Vermont's number one painting show for nearly three decades.
Yeah.
While Carl's signature whisper has long kept viewers from Pittsfield to St. Albans breathlessly hanging on his every stroke, the station eventually hires a younger, better painter who steals everything and everyone that Carl loves.
Oh, boy. That is a fantastic idea.
It's got all the actors that we love. Wendy McClendon Covey is in it. Stephen Root is in it. Denny Dillon is in it. This looks great. It's written and directed by Britt McAdams.
So it's a send-up.
Yeah. It's not a Bob Ross movie. It's like a send-up of that character.
Yeah.
So it's like he's Bob Ross, but like a crazy Bob Ross who gets pushed to the edge of madness.
Great.
Yeah. This I'm infinitely more interested in watching paint than Air. I don't know. We'll
find... I like the fact that we have movies that are called Air, Paint. It just makes it easier on everyone.
Yeah, they're not asking a lot of us. You want to go watch Air for 2 hours, or would you like to watch Paint for 2 hours?
I'd rather go watch paint dry.
This says that Air is projected to gross between $16 and $18 million. Okay, I guess. A basketball movie should involve some basketball, right? Like a team has to win a big game. This is just about how a guy got a contract signed for... And also, I remember Michael Jordan getting drafted by the Chicago Bulls.
Yes.
He was not a nobody.
No, he was not. He was. He won a national championship. He hit the shot to win the national championship as a freshman.
Yes.
People knew who he was. And by the time he was a sophomore and junior, he was clearly the best basketball player in college basketball.
Right.
Yeah.
Portland took Sam Bowie because they already had a shooting guard, they had right?
Clyde Drexler.
Right. Clyde the Clyde. So...
And Elijah went number one.
You're right. Bowie went to two and Jordan went three, right?
Yes, exactly.
But and this idea that somebody at Nike took a chance on a nobody, that's just not accurate. And
they covered some of this in The Last Dance, too.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, with the shoe, where Nike was looking to hopefully sell $3 million worth of shoes in what, like the first 4 years?
Right.
And they sold like $123 million in the first year?
Yes. No, I get that it's an interesting story, but it's about selling shoes. Like, a biography of Michael Jordan, I really wouldn't care to watch that either because I feel like I know as much as I need to know about the guy.
Yeah.
The only biography that we really need to know about is the time that he saved planet Earth from cartoon Martians. That movie's already been done.
It has.
And it was fine. This thing, it just seems like a trick. It seems like they made a trailer to trick me into going to the theater so they can roll me and take my wallet and steal my identity.
It looks like...
This is just like when I would get invited to parties as a teenager... And they'd all just laugh at me when I walked in the door. This is exactly what this is. I'm going to have a coat thrown over my head, and I'm going to get beat up with towels that have soap in them so it doesn't leave a mark. I know how this works.
What was the Mario Lopez movie where he was Colonel Sanders?
Right.
What was that called?
Right.
That's what that feels like.
Yes. Yes, it's like a send-up of a movie. That's really just an elaborate, that's exactly what this is. That's exactly what this feels like. What was the name of that one? That wonderful movie? The, where he was some sort of sexy Colonel Sanders, recipe for seduction.
Recipe for seduction. And who aired that? Was that?
That was on the Lifetime Channel.
Lifetime Channel. Good for them.
At a dinner party featuring fried chicken at the lavish Mancera house, Billy Garibaldi III proposes to Jessica Mancera. She is taken aback and says she will think about it, angering her mother, Bunny. The next day, Bunny confronts Jessica, explaining that her marrying Billy is the only way to solve the family's financial woes. They are interrupted by their new live-in chef.
Live-in chef.
Harlan Sanders. Harlan and Jessica are immediately smitten with each other. Jessica later offers Harlan a tour of the grounds, and they quickly share their life stories. Harlan mentions a secret fried chicken recipe that he envisions changing the world when an angry Billy interrupts and makes a thinly veiled threat towards Jessica. This goes on and on and on. It seems like it's a story that's, this is, Darren, you've absolutely figured it out. That's what this is. This is recipe for seduction, but instead of chicken, it's Nike shoes.
Yeah, well.
When I was a kid, we went.
That's a hell of a job that Mike Schultz has.
We went to Great America when I was a kid. Little kid. And as you're exiting the park, they had free children's books that they wanted to give the kids. Mm-hmm. And I thought, free book? Sure. It's a long ride home from Great America. I'll take a little reading material. And the book they handed out was about the leopard who lost its spots. Mm-hmm. The entire book was just a long commercial for Cascade dish soap. And I remember sitting in the back seat of that station wagon. No, dying laughing at just how cynical the whole thing was. Like, I remember thinking the spot somehow fell into Cascade dish soap and then he lost all of his spots. Because you see, Cascade leaves,
so effective.
Cascade leaves everything
virtually
spotless.
Right.
And that was the whole premise of this children's book. And I thought, are they marketing to me? I am not making decisions on what kind of soap she buys for washing dishes.
I don't have the purse strings.
Exactly. First of all, you think I'm going to tell my mom I want Cascade dish soap? This is ridiculous.
I want that leopard to have its spots back.
And also, yes, what a cruel thing to do, because it was like a baby leopard.
Yeah.
And it was like the leopard was miserable because it lost its spots. But hey, that's what happens when you use Cascade. That was the whole book. And I remember just thinking, like, first of all, this is a ripoff. Like, this really, it should have been just a book about a leopard doing some sort of adventure. But you spent all of this time and energy, and you had someone come up to me in a parking lot to hand me a children's book and act like it was a big deal. The whole thing was a dishwasher, you know, dishwashing detergent.
Dish soap.
Commercial, exactly. And you're giving this to an 8-year-old boy?
I preferred it when we left Modern Woodman Park and they handed out loaves of bread.
I could use that.
That I can use.
That I have a use for. But they didn't try to make a movie about the bread.
No. Although, that's going to be the next movie.
Bread.
You've got air, paint, bread. It's the David Gates story.
Number two.
Number two.
Number two.
Two.
Fight breaks out between two guys over the weekend. Both participants had to go to the hospital. This is a fight that happened over a late night game of Monopoly. I would love to see the data on how many people end up going to the hospital as a result games.
Every time. What's the percentage when you break out the Monopoly board?
Both of these guys had to be taken to the hospital after sustaining cuts from a samurai sword.
And the samurai sword always.
Yes.
With
if you're invited to play Monopoly somewhere.
First thing you ask is, where's the samurai sword?
What's the sword sitch? Uh-huh. That's the first question you ask. Because if they're like, oh, yeah, where we're going to play, the guy collects swords. Mm. You got to find something else to do that day.
Sure do.
Incident began when four people were playing Monopoly on the pavement in front of a house.
Oh, brother.
It's worth pointing out that this story comes to us from Brussels.
Wow.
It just doesn't seem...
Wow.
These guys were playing Monopoly on the pavement in front of a house, disturbing the homeowner, who came out in an attempt to move them away from his house. After an argument ensued, the resident's son came out to defend his father, armed with a concealed samurai sword.
Concealed?
You'll never find it. Guess where it is.
Is it down your leg?
Maybe. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You want to play that game?
We're trying to play this one.
Just trying to play Monopoly on the pavement.
What? No big deal.
Totally normal. Yeah. What's the problem here? In the ensuing melee, the case in which the katana sword was stored was damaged, exposing the blade, and in the process, injuring both the son and one of the pavement Monopoly players.
Well, yeah, once you pull the samurai out of your pant leg, you might hurt yourself.
Well, you're supposed to. That's the code of the Monopoly samurai, right? You must draw blood. Brussels police confirmed that the men had to be subsequently taken to the hospital. The board game player suffered only minor injuries and was released from both the hospital and police arrest by Sunday evening. But the son, who owned the samurai sword, it says here, is currently in a life-threatening condition.
Oh boy.
After the blade struck one of his arteries.
Sure!
What are you doing?
Oh, brother.
Dan, I'm not letting them play Monopoly in front of the house like this. This is why I bought the sword. Everybody laughed at me. Well, who's laughing now? I'm Brussels Samurai. And I'm going out there. It's going to be like that Akira Kurosawa film where them guys are playing Monopoly and then the samurai has to come out and tell them to move. It's going to be just like that.
You need a little help. You need a little protection. Here comes the muscles from Brussels, baby.
Jean-Claude Van... Damn it, I stabbed myself with my samurai sword.
Badly, I might add.
Oh, and I am bleeding out.
And I mean badly.
Oh, if only I hit my muscles.
Boy, that's a lot of blood in a short amount of time.
Oh, if I had it to do over again, I would have maybe come out here with a baseball bat. But we don't have baseball bats because it's Brussels. Oh, this was not well thought out.
I'm gonna pass out.
Oh,
gone.
Oh, Belgian Samurai coming soon to Amazon Prime.
Sure.
Only one episode, though. and it's only like 15 minutes long.
In tonight's episode of Belgian Samurai, the samurai is called to defend his father's home from wayward Monopoly players. Our scene begins.
Hey, you guys, my dad says you gotta leave. Or what? Fight ensues, and now he's very
You're
much...
You're bleeding all over the Monopoly board.
Now, let me ask you this. When the cops come to take you, do you, because I know I would, do you grab the get out of jail free card?
Of course.
Knowing that it's not going to get you out of jail for free.
Of course you try it.
But just for the story, right?
Just for fun.
Just for a laugh.
How about this?
I know this is probably not going to work.
I know, officer. I would kick myself if I didn't try.
What an opportunity for a laugh. I'm not going to say no to that.
Three.
All right, number three.
Number three.
Number three.
It's your birthday or you know someone who's got one. The email is open at birthdaybarn at planet939.com, or you can always use our text line. It's convenient. 563-223-8355.
See how easy that is?
Yeah, you'll find the number for the text line in the studio line, because it's a lot of numbers to throw at you. It should be showing up on your radio right now. You should be able to look at your radio and see 563-223-8355. If we've got everything working the way we hope it is, just put that on your phone and save it as, like, you know, Planet text line, and then you don't have to worry about remembering it. Because I have to look at it every time. I don't have this thing committed to memory.
I know it ends with nickels.
Like, I have my childhood phone number and the numbers of all my buddies from eighth grade committed to memory.
Yeah.
But I struggle with my wife's number when I need to fill it out on, like, forms.
Well, that's because your brain's not quite as mossy as it was back then.
Well, right. And also, I couldn't just push a button.
And you were
kind of, I didn't have contacts when I wanted to call somebody.
Yeah,
right?
It's muscle memory. Yeah. You just basically.
Well, no, it's memory. It's not muscle.
Well, no, your fingers.
Oh, yeah, I guess there is that.
I mean, you're constantly dialing your buddy's phone. So it got to a point where you were like, hey, man,
I don't know if I'd say constantly. You make me sound like a maniac.
You wouldn't leave him alone.
Is Greg there?
Is Greg still there? Did you need anything? No, I just want to know if he was still there.
Just doing a vibe check, which is not how we talk in the 80s. It'll make sense in 2023, though.
Vibe check. Vibe check.
I'm just doing a vibe check. What?
Whatevs.
Two quick food stories I wanted to share with you.
Food, all right.
Let's begin in Las Vegas, where a woman is suing Wendy's. She says she bit into a hamburger out there in Vegas, one of those hamburger sandwiches
that
they're very popular on the menu. She says she bit into the hamburger and it contained pieces of glass-like particles, which broke her teeth. That's not great. Damn you, Baconator. You've struck again.
And son of Baconator.
And to a lesser extent, the son of the Baconator.
Why, you son of a Baconator.
We got to start doing that. We got to start calling each other.
If we're gonna do hold on to your cat,
yeah.
We have to start doing, why, you son of a Baconator.
Rommel, you son of a Baconator, I read your book. That's it.
Uh-huh.
That guy is a real son of a Baconator. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Broke her teeth biting into the hamburger sandwich. Jennifer Haston is accusing Wendy's, the one there on Rancho Drive, of serving her a hamburger with, quote, hard and clear glass particles. No.
You don't want that.
No. No mayo and no glass. That's how I order it. I'm reading here from the lawsuit. It says, when she began to consume the hamburger prepared and cooked by Wendy's and provided to her at the pickup window, she experienced a tremendous sense of shock and fear as her hamburger was not juicy and tender as expected, but instead consisted of hard and clear glass-like particles that not only created loud crunching and breaking sounds, but in fact, these hard and clear glass-like particles actually broke many of Ms. Haston's teeth.
How does that happen?
Well, this is the question. What kind of alligator grip does she have on her food? The simple act of, I should think, chewing on glass, your teeth should be able to take that, right? She's chewing down with such tremendous force that it's shattering her teeth?
Ow.
Right?
Oh, man.
She then spit the food into a napkin, the lawsuit says. The pain was overwhelming, intense, and excruciating. Hard and clear glass-like particular broke many of her teeth.
I wonder if she's willing to settle for a gift card.
I'll take it.
Free Frosties.
I will say this seems like a reasonable amount of money she's asking for.
Yeah.
She wants a jury trial.
Yeah.
And it says here damages in excess of $15,000.
Yeah.
Which they say is standard in Clark County civil cases. Wendy's corporate office not responding for requests to comment. No. Are you saying in excess of 15 grand meaning
15 million.
Right, that can mean anything. In excess of 15 grand could be
That could be anything.
Yeah. It seems too like, you know, she was in a tremendous amount of pain, but also it seems like her feelings have been hurt. Like, I trusted you, Wendy's. That woman has mom sewn into her shirt.
Right.
And this is a betrayal on a level like I can't even process. As bad as that experience may or may not have been, again, these are allegations. We don't know the story. That'll get sorted out in a court. I do have one that's, I think, slightly worse. A woman is dead and her husband is in a coma after they had deadly puffer fish for lunch. 83-year-old woman died and her husband's in a coma after they ate puffer fish.
Fugumi.
Without knowing that the fish contained deadly toxins. Isn't that the whole gimmick?
Yeah.
With these puffer fish? Their daughter says that their 84-year-old father purchased the fish from a fishmonger in Malaysia on Saturday, despite having never heard of the fish before.
And ate the whole thing. Head to tail.
They even asked if they could maybe suck on the lure that caught the fish.
Could I?
My parents are very weird. She says here, my parents have been buying fish from the same fishmonger for many years, so my father did not think twice about it. He would not have knowingly bought something so deadly to eat and put their lives in danger.
And the fishmonger's not going to tell him.
Well, yeah, if you're a fishmonger and you've got puffer fish, isn't puffer fish like really expensive too? Because they have to do a very, like, you have to really know what you're doing.
Job to it.
Right? The daughter is saying she and her brother had to rush the parents and were halfway through their journey when they got news that mom was dead. They rushed to their parents, I guess. So dad calls to say, hey, mom's dead and I'm going into a coma.
I don't know if that's exactly the phone conversation.
Do I have that wrong? Hey, kids, hey, it's daddy. Just a quick update.
Mom's dead, and I'm slipping into a coma. I don't know.
Hey, kids, are you still on your way here? Quick update. Mom's dead, and I'm going to be in a coma any second now. Okay.
Oh, brother. Okay, well, we'll step on it.
All right.
I guess maybe we won't stop at the store.
Don't stop and pick up any fish on your way over here. We're not happy with that fishmonger right now, I can tell you that.
We've had enough.
Her mother began having difficulty breathing and was shivering after she fried and ate the puffer fish for lunch. Her husband soon began experiencing similar symptoms.
Don't feel so great either if it makes you feel better. Oh, it doesn't make you feel better.
We're going to get through
it's
this.
It's just something people say.
So they rushed to their parents and were halfway through the journey when they got news that their mom had died. You're right. Probably not from the dad.
No, probably not. Yeah, Dad, what's going on? Mom's dead.
Mom's dead, and
I'm slipping into a coma.
If I'm being honest, I'm about 90% into my coma right now. I don't even know how I was able to dial you guys.
Muscle memory, I guess.
Just muscle memory. You're in my contacts. Her cause of death identified as food poisoning with neurological manifestation resulting in respiratory failure and irregular heartbeat.
Oh, wow.
Heart rate. Possibly due to consuming the fish. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that is what it was. The daughter says she was devastated and felt indescribable pain after her mother's shocking death. Dad's in a coma and continues to be treated in the intensive care unit. The daughter says here, I am prepared for the worst because the doctor told us that even if he is able to pull through the ordeal, he may not be the same anymore due to his old age.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
He's going to wake up and mom's dead.
Which right.
He knew about before he slipped totally into the coma.
And you got to find a new fishmonger.
Yeah.
Puffer fish can contain potent and deadly toxins. Tetrodotoxin. And also something called saxitoxin, which can cause severe illness and death. That's according to our Food and Drug Administration. The agency says the fish is only safe to eat if it's cleaned and prepared in a special manner that removes the toxic parts, as you cannot destroy the toxins by cooking them out.
And what mom did was just fry up the fish. Fried fish for lunch, huh?
Well, it's Lent. They only recommend, the FDA only recommends buying puffer fish from a known safe source.
Not for her, it's not Lent.
If cows had some sort of poison gland.
Yeah.
And cows.
Cows.
If cows had a similar, you know, yeah, defense system, yeah, thanks to evolution.
Yeah.
And if a cow wasn't prepared in just the right way, it could kill you.
Yeah, I guess we're off cows.
We wouldn't be eating hamburger sandwiches.
No.
Not to the degree that we do now. In Japan, only qualified chefs with knowledge of toxin removal are authorized to serve puffer fish. But in Malaysia, where this couple lives, there are no such guidelines. I'd look into that. I'm not here to tell Malaysia how to, you know, have their fishmongers do business. But do you suppose puffer fish tastes really good?
Well, don't you get a high from it?
Do you?
I thought so.
Oh. Because, like, what would be the point of risking your life
for a piece of fish? I believe it's tasty, but I think you get a high off of it.
Okay. Well, that makes some sense. Because otherwise...
Is that not correct?
I'll just have cod, man.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? I'm not playing Russian roulette for a piece of fish.
No.
What are we doing here?
Mmm, it's very tasty.
So you get some sort of... Is it a high or is it a rush knowing that you've cheated death?
Well, maybe both.
Hmm. Puffer fish, there are 100 different species known as the blowfish, fugu, glowfish. They're called puffer fish because when they're threatened, they puff up to about twice their normal size by gulping water.
Try to swallow me.
In this enlarged state, the puffer fish can swim at only half their normal speed. That seems like a dumb defense mechanism.
Yeah. Wouldn't you rather be quicker?
Puffer fish are generally believed to be the second most poisonous vertebrates in the world, after only the golden poison frog. Have you ever heard of the golden poison frog?
Yeah, I think it's on Fremont Street.
It's right by Fitzgerald's.
Uh-huh.
You can't miss it. So the golden poison frog is number one in terms of lethality.
Leave me alone.
Most puffer fish are found in subtropical and tropical marine waters, including coral reefs in the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Indian Oceans. From Atlantic to Pacific, gee, the poison is terrific.
Four.
Yesterday we had a couple of Dear Abby.
Yes.
Advice columns. I got a couple more I want to share with you for some good advice. These are not Dear Abby. These are the rest of the advice columns. Again, rather than going to a friend or a neighbor or the internet to get an instant answer to a question, these are people who still, in 2023, are contacting newspaper advice columnists, or sometimes, I guess, advice columnists on websites, but still, you're not going to get the immediate answer that you want. And I think a lot of times you don't get the answer that you want because these things are written by crazy people who are looking to have the crazy reinforced, and that just doesn't happen. This one, they write to Slate.com, and they want to know, how can I convince my boyfriend to let me bring furniture into our shared home? I just moved in with my boyfriend of 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
This is quicker than I normally move in with someone. But I had problems with an awful landlord, and my boyfriend had just bought a house. Things have been going really well, except for one issue. My boyfriend's hobby is woodworking.
So he makes everything.
He plans to furnish the house exclusively
with his handiwork,
with pieces he builds himself. He's really talented, but has limited time due to a demanding job.
It takes him forever.
So one piece can take him months. In the meantime, we're going without a lot of furniture, sleeping on a mattress on the floor, eating our dinner on the floor. I offered to pay for secondhand furniture to use until he finishes his replacements.
Yeah.
But my boyfriend claims that living with substandard furniture will, his words, pollute my imagination. My boyfriend has a lot of odd views about things, which 99% of the time I find funny and endearing. But it can make it difficult to reason with him on occasion.
It may turn out he's quite dangerous. Is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
He's got some very bizarre, far-fetched ideas.
I mean, that's... He's
clearly...
That's what I'm picking up on.
I am, too.
This is what I would have told you.
Yeah.
What you're looking at here...
You can't stop him. He's too insane.
Yes.
No. We're not getting any other furniture here. It'll pollute my imagination.
You've got more problems than a lack of furniture, friend.
Should I insist on temporary furniture? It is his house, and he was kind enough to let me move in rent-free.
Yeah. Not completely rent-free, by the way.
So I'm not sure if I'm within my rights. And after a lot of rocky dating history, I don't want to start an argument with a guy who could be the one. But I don't want to spend the next couple of years making friends sit in a circle on the floor when I throw a dinner party. Slate's.
Well, I don't know that you're going to be throwing any dinner parties.
I wouldn't have people over to the house if this was who I was living with. No, I would recommend. Let's go out. Let's rent a room somewhere.
Let's go to that nice restaurant right across from the police station.
Jenny Desmond Harris says that your boyfriend's stubbornness is a bigger threat to your relationship than any potential argument. Quote, you want to be partnered with someone who cares about how you feel and is open to compromise. I'm not sure how clear you've been with him about your needs, but make sure he understands how important this is to you and see if he changes his mind.
Yeah. And then get the hell out of there.
And then run for the hills. Are you kidding me? How can I get my husband to stop secretly taking photos of me and sending them to our family, friends, and coworkers?
Oh,
why are these women putting up with any of this?
I have no idea.
My husband is a very sweet, good-natured guy.
Is he?
But lately, he keeps upsetting me with a particularly annoying and, in my view, very inconsiderate habit. He loves taking pictures of me, including candid photos, when I don't realize he's taking them. I accept it as part of who he is.
You shouldn't.
And I try to be patient about it.
You shouldn't.
The really upsetting part is that he sometimes sends these photos without my consent, even if I find them embarrassing. For example, he sends the pictures to his family on a group chat that includes 9 relatives. Today, he even sent an embarrassing photo to one of my friends and coworkers. I never find out until after the pictures are sent. I have repeatedly tried to explain that this upsets me and is an invasion of my privacy. I also explained that some moments are intimate and should be left between us. But he doesn't get it and just laughs it off. He claims all the photos are cute and beautiful and that I shouldn't mind. The last two times...
The last two times
I found out he sent these photos, I felt rage. What do I do?
Yeah, I've told people that, you know, if they take a picture, like during the holidays or this or that,
mm-hmm.
I'm in that picture. Don't post it on Facebook.
Right. Well, obviously, what you're dealing with here, I mean, you say that your husband is sweet and good natured.
No, he's not.
If his idea, Judith Martin writes here, if his idea of fun is to hound, upset, and embarrass his wife, that's not part of who he is, as you assert. It's something he's choosing to do. Your husband's
a jerk.
You can't,
that whole excuse of, well, that's just who he is. What? he's just a monster. That's what he is. So he gets excused for being a monster. No, doesn't work that way.
Then who I am is gone.
Yeah.
Dig. I'm out the door like Orange Juice Jones.
dig.
This is one from the Ask the Manager advice column. These are people that have work-related problems. We need to take a break from crazy boyfriends and husbands for this one, okay? Should I be concerned that a colleague gave me advice on how to gracefully resign after I gave my notice? I gave my 3 weeks notice at my current job yesterday.
Yeah.
And things have gotten really weird.
Okay.
About an hour after I had the conversation with my manager, I received an email from a colleague who is close with my manager, but who I am not close with.
Yeah.
He congratulated me on my new position and then sent 3 web links to articles on how to gracefully resign.
I already did that.
All 3 links have these in the title. It seems like a phrase he might have Googled. Am I being paranoid or does this seem as pointed as it feels? I'm not sure where it's coming from, as I've never had any negative feedback about my professionalism, and so far, my resignation has been very by the book. I'd like to ask him whether my manager feels I haven't been professional in my resignation, but I'm wondering if it's just better to let this one go. The details of my resignation. Yesterday, I emailed my manager in the morning, asking when she had time to meet and talk. She's a busy person. So she asked if I could call, to which I responded that I would rather talk in person. We confirmed a meeting time, but not 5 minutes later, I got a call from her asking for a hint about what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
I said I would just have to have the whole conversation. A hint would be hard.
Yeah.
But she said, just tell her. So I did. I told her it had been a hard decision, that I enjoyed working here, but I accept another job offer and that my last day would be in 3 weeks.
Yep.
I also let her know that I still wanted to meet in person because I was working on a transition plan, but I wanted to make sure our priorities matched up. It was a short call, but it seemed to go okay at the time. And if anything, she seemed disappointed or sad.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, my manager does have a history of speaking poorly of people behind their backs once they're done working here.
Of course she does.
I'm concerned she's not telling people the truth about my resignation, but I'm not sure if that matters.
You've already resigned.
What do you care?
You've already resigned.
You don't work there anymore.
Yeah, and if you don't...
Well, she's saying I didn't resign gracefully.
It doesn't...
What difference does that make?
No, you've already... said you're gone, and if you don't want 3 weeks, I'll leave today.
Right.
If that's what you want.
Right. I want to try and make this as easy as possible that's for everybody.
That's why I tried to. I can leave today.
Right.
If that's
right.
If that's a problem.
Right. I'm here for the checks.
Yeah.
And I found another place that'll give me checks.
Yeah.
I will, as a courtesy, continue to work here to make things easy.
And if you badmouth me,
bye.
If you badmouth me,
yes.
You will hear from me.
What you'll hear is the screeching tires in the parking lot. Because that's it. We're done here.
You don't have to resign again.
I'm done. Do what you want. Pull the plug.
One last one here.
And any sort of bad mouthing that goes on?
Yeah.
I probably deserve it. Yeah, you're probably accurate.
What does this need people have to be liked
yeah.
by people that aren't in their lives anymore? Yeah. What is that?
I don't know.
Last one, Darren. How can I get my family to stop walking into my apartment while my girlfriend and I are having sex? I'm from a big, tight-knit family. Where everyone is in each other's business.
Get out!
Even though I live alone, my parents, siblings, cousins, etc., all have keys to my apartment.
Why?
And sometimes will drop by.
Why do they have keys?
About a month ago, my new girlfriend, Beck, and I were having sex on the kitchen floor when my mom walked in unexpectedly. My mom was shocked and called Becca a rude name. In surprise.
What the?
Becca pretty much ran for the shower and left me to deal with things.
So I finished the act.
All hail the king!
Hold on. Hold on, Ma!
What are you doing?
Yeah, get those keys back.
The conversation was awkward, but things only got more awkward when they left. Becca is now weird about sex at my apartment.
Yeah.
And if I initiate, she insists it has to be in the bedroom with the door locked. I tried to talk to her about calming down on this, since awkward moments happen to everyone. I even told her how my dad walked in on me with an ex a couple of years ago. But she only got more upset with this news and said I need to start deadbolting the apartment when she's over if I was going to share my keys.
Yeah.
My family has also come over multiple times when we're just watching TV or making dinner, when they should have been fine to come in, but are locked out and are teasing me about the deadbolts. Becca told me she'll walk away if she doesn't feel like there's enough privacy. I feel like I'm caught in the middle between two pushy sides. How do they get them to leave me alone? I'm 35 years old. What?
All of you stay away. Don't ever come over here again.
Would you ever in a million years give anyone a key to your apartment?
No.
For any reason whatsoever.
I can't imagine the...
You like that, Ma? You like that?
I can't imagine. Yeah. I can't imagine.
Yeah, Ma.
I can't imagine the person person who owns the apartment likes this idea. You gave out keys to what?
All my cousins and siblings and parents. What?
To my building?
Well, just to... They have access to my apartment.
In my building?
Yeah.
No.
I wonder if Becca has a key to his apartment. Well, no, we've only been dating a while. I've known my cousins forever. I'm 35 years old. And you're 35 and you're still into kitchen floor sex? What's that about? Let's unpack that. Good God, that's a lot. As you can
better
imagine.
Better get the Swiffer.
As you can imagine, the get the
Hey, we bought you a Swiffer for Christmas.
Ah.
Thanks.
Yeah, there's...
I've been needing one of these.
Gosh, a lot of crumbs under the oven. I'm just noticing those now. Are you almost done? As you can imagine, the advice given here is you need to start asking your family to stop dropping by unannounced. What you describe goes way beyond awkward moments, and Beck is only being pushy by your family's invasive standards.
Yeah.
Privacy is actually a fairly commonplace ideal in Western culture. Mm-hmm. This is not something that we should really have to walk
you through. And it's been around for a while.
Oh, she's being so pushy. I mean, just because Mom walked in on us in the kitchen floor and called her a slut. Now I gotta stop having family members drop by whenever?
Oh, boy.
I mean, yeah, she's... Beck is being a little pushy about all this. Does everyone agree? Wow. There you go. That's another installment of Dave and Darren's
Good Advice.
Good Advice.
And that was good advice. Good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price. I sincerely doubt that the world could do without my good advice.
Number
five.
One of the guys that was very instrumental in all this internet stuff is a engineer that worked at Google. Guy's name is Ray Kurzweil. Kurzweil has been called Thomas Edison's rightful heir.
Okay.
This is not some rando. When I tell you what he's saying now, I want you to know this guy is... got a track record of knowing what he's talking about and being right. He was included in the list. PBS came out with a list of the 16 revolutionaries who made America. This guy made the list.
Okay.
Inc. magazine named him number 8 on the most fascinating entrepreneurs in the United States, and they call him Thomas Edison's rightful heir. He knows what he's talking about, and he is saying that we, as a species, humankind, we are 8 years away from achieving immortality. Uh-huh. He says he's made a stark realization that humans will achieve immortality in 8 years.
And what's the retirement age?
The answer is no. I mean, well, if we're immortal, you can't retire. There's no retirement.
Oh, we're doomed.
Retirement?
We're doomed.
Are you out of your mind? No, the payoff is you don't have to die. But you...
I'll kill you.
No.
No, yeah, but you could still kill somebody.
This is good news. Gosh, I wonder, now imagine if they're able to figure out a way to make people immortal. Well, this is what I'd like them to do first. Test this out first on people that have been given life sentences. What if you've got a life sentence and you're alive at a time when we figure out how to make everybody immortal? This guy has made a bunch of predictions in the past. They're looking at the track record here. This Ray Kurzweil. 147 of the predictions that he's made, 86% of those predictions have been absolutely correct. So a lot of people, when this Ray Kurzweil is saying we're, again, 8 years away, if we can just make it to somewhere beyond 2030, we're going to be just fine. He says, discussing the expansion in genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics, there's going to be an age, and we're very close to this age getting started, an age-reversing nanobot. Essentially, super tiny robots will repair your damaged cells and tissues that deteriorate as the body ages, and there will be no more cancer, there will be no more disease. Anytime something's
and
wrong
I'm
with
get
you,
younger.
I didn't.
If I make it,
see, I don't know that that's part of the deal. Do we get younger?
That's what it sounds like.
Or do you just are you just going to be frozen at the age that you are in 8 years? He's right, 86% of the time.
How 86% of the time? Who's keeping track?
I am. They are. The source that I'm reading this from says of the 147 predictions he's made about the future, 86% of them have come true.
Oh, okay.
He believes this technology is set to become so powerful that it will help us live forever in what is known as the singularity. Singularity is a theoretical point when artificial intelligence surpasses human intelligence and changes the path of our evolution.
Well, why not?
If you were right on 86% of your March Madness brackets,
yeah,
you'd be a very rich man right now. This guy...
It's better than 0%.
Yes.
I can tell you that.
Humans will achieve immortality in 8 years, according to the former Google engineer that, again, more often than not, a lot more often than not, is absolutely correct about things. This feat achievable around 2030.
Oh, that was my retirement year.
Well...
How's that for a topper?
Oh, it's a topper, all right.
I can't do my work.
You're going to get to work.
Oh, I'm going to need a
retirement. Kurzweil was hired by Google in 2012 to work on new projects involving machine learning and language processing, but he's been making predictions in technological advances long before. In 1990, he predicted the world's best chess player would lose to a computer by the year 2000. It happened in 1997 when Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov. He made another startling prediction in 1999. He said that by the year 2023, a $1,000 laptop would have a human brain's computing power and storage capacity. Now, this former Google engineer believes technology is set to become so powerful it's going to help us live forever in the singularity. He at one time said that the singularity, the technological singularity, would happen by 2045.
And now he's bumped it up 15 years.
AI will be able to pass a valid Turing test in the year 2029. That's a test of a machine's ability to exhibit intelligent behavior equivalent to or indistinguishable from that of a human. That we're only 6 years away from computers being exactly like us. Machines are already making us more intelligent, and connecting them to our neocortex will help people think more smartly. He thinks the implanting of computers in our brains will improve us, and it's nothing to be afraid of. Quote, we're going to get more neocortex, we're going to be funnier, we're going to be better at music, we're going to be sexier. Well, sign me up for that. I'd love to be better at music and sexier.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hooked up to the singularity. Who wants a piece of this pie?
Well, everyone's so damn sexy. I can't choose.
Quote, we're really going to exemplify all of the things we value in humans to a greater degree. Rather than a vision of the future where machines will take over humanity, Kurzweil believes that we'll be able to create a human-machine synthesis that will make us better. Nanomachines inserted into the human body. This is, the stuff of, like, Star Trek.
Someone slipped it in my drink.
I got robot roofied. Great. Took a sip of a drink, and now they're down there curing my cancer. He says, ultimately, this is going to affect everything. We're going to be able to meet the physical needs of all humans. We're going to expand our minds and exemplify these artistic qualities that we value. Although, I got a real problem with that. If art is something that is created not by us alone, but with help from a machine, is it even art? I mean, I don't know. That's like a big, huge question that probably we should be asking
basically
in a dorm room smoking marijuana out of a hollowed-out apple.
And you'll have music made by Mr. Space Baby, and you'll love it. And he doesn't even exist.
Mr. Space Baby.
Yeah.
Well, again, the fact that he's saying this is 8 years away is, I think, the headline. Because I think I can hang on for at least 8 more years. I think I've got that in me.
Yeah, but then you... careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know that living forever really should be the goal. Because who knows what we're robbing ourselves of. This is pretty heavy stuff, but for a Tuesday morning. But I will say this. I do like the idea of thing being inserted in my brain, it makes me sexier. I'm going to be bringing robot sexy back.
Well, it doesn't need to be put in your brain. It needs to be put in everybody else's brain.
Oh, okay. Okay, so everyone else has to have...
Everyone just thinks you're sexier.
Okay. Well, whatever it takes.
Yeah. You haven't changed it at all. It's just, their standards have been lowered.
It's science.
Text line 563-223-8355. Jim says only the wealthiest are going to be able to afford these nanobots. Yes. Overpopulation leads to Soylent Green. Well, I'm willing to give that a try too, actually.
Soylent Green is people!
What flavors do you have?
I mean...
ranch?
As long as there's no mayo in it, pour me up a big bowl of it. And then Thomas says, I'm starting to worry about Darren's retirement chances. Do you ever let him wet his beak a little bit in all that brood money? Are you out of your ever-loving mind? No. No, I don't give Darren a portion of my brood money.
Don't you get paid in gift cards?
Yeah, I think you'd be... I don't even know how to react to that.
It's only redeemable at the Hasty Tasty vending machine inside the building.
Are you kidding me? Do you ever let him wet his beak a little bit in all that brood money?
What is Brood on next?
I'm glad you asked, Darren. Legitimately, we have a brand new episode debuting this Saturday night at 6 p.m. on WQAD.
Have you talked to him about doing one on a plane?
Yes, that has come up a bunch.
Yeah.
We just haven't figured out the logistics.
Okay.
We might be doing one on a cruise ship at some point.
I thought you weren't going to go on a cruise ship.
Well, if there's beer, I might.
Well, there's beer on every cruise ship.
Well, but if there's a brewery on the cruise ship. They have their own. They make the beer
at sea.
Yeah, at sea. That's the angle of that story. I don't think we're doing that anytime soon. But
what boat does that?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but we had a conversation with them when we were in Denver at the Great American Beer Festival. And we talked about it during our 100th episode special. And there's talk of revisiting that. So, yeah. But no, I will not be letting Darren wet his beak.
Brood.
In the vast fortune that I make doing Brood.
Brood is off to Haiti. What could go wrong?
I'm going to go in the parking lot and scream at the top of my lungs for a little bit.
Is it all over, Rock?
I guess so.
I didn't think it'd be like this.
That came together, but nicely.
Mm.
As it always does. Thanks so much for downloading, and we hope enjoying the Top 5 Things podcast. You can hear us live again every morning from 5:30 to 10. Well, every weekday morning.
Check yourself.
No, we do need some time to, you know, recharge the batteries. Until we get a chance to do this for you again next time. Hang loose, kooks.
You stay classy and safe, Quad Cities.
Come on, Quad Cities. Representing. This is for the Quad Cities reference spot. Davenport. Yeah, we keeping it locked. Rock out. Come on. And it just don't stop. East Moline. Yeah, they keeping it hot.
Well, it was fun. I'm going to go take a nap now, and then I think I'm going to call some hospitals.
Hi, this is Art Linkletter. Thanks for listening.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.